Hello and welcome to the State of Talk podcast, brought to you by the International Society for Conversation Analysis. I am Sophia Fiedler, postdoc in applied linguistics at Neuchâtel University and one of the hosts of this podcast. In this episode, I'm pleased to introduce an interview with Susanne Gündner and Jörg Bergmann, two researchers who are among the first ones to apply conversation analysis and ethnomethodology in Germany. Jörg Bergmann is Emeritus Professor of Sociology in the Department of Sociology at the University of Bielefeld. His ethnomethodological and conversation analytic work has explored gossip and morality in discourse, as well as the management of problems and disfluencies in conversation. Susanne Gündner is Senior Professor at the Department of German Linguistics at the University of Münster. Her main research domains are grammar and interaction and construction grammar, German as a second language, intercultural communication, and in earlier works, she also investigated gender and interaction. Her most recent research topic is medical interaction and how normality is constructed between doctors and patients. A great deal more could be said about each of their individual research, but in this interview, the focus lies on their personal history with and around ethnomethodology and conversation analysis. Jörg discovered EMNCA during his research stay at UCLA in 1977 and 78 and co-organized the first conference applying EMNCA in Germany. Susanne, a student at Konstanz University at that time, had her first contact with CA in seminars and was fascinated with this new empirical approach that, later on, opened up new possibilities for her to explain grammatical phenomena in spoken language to learners of German. In this podcast, Jörg and Susanne tell us more about how EMNCA arrived in Germany, how the methodology evoked both enthusiasm and skepticism, how both approaches evolved over time, and where they see the future of EMNCA. This interview format is only one style of the many types of podcasts that the ISCA Publications Committee is hoping to present. Some of the larger goals of this publication committee, with the new website, the social media presence, and the forum newsletter, is to generate discussion, collaboration, and put some fire in our belly from those interactional discoveries that can only come from our kinds of naturalistic exploration. If you have any ideas or would like to participate, please go to conversationanalysis.org and reach out to us. We'd love your input on what we're doing, which is to establish a truly international connection between our EMNCA communities. So, thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, Susanne and Jörg. I'm so glad that you are both available and willing to do this interview with me. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me about ethnomethodology and conversation analysis in Germany on this Tuesday afternoon. Something that we like to ask people first in this podcast is how they actually get or got into ethnomethodology and conversation analysis. But since today's interview is about how EMNCA came to Germany, I would like to reformulate the question. So let us start with you, Jörg. When and how did you get acquainted with EMNCA, I imagine outside of Germany? Why were you fascinated by it, or both of them?
There's a personal biographical history to that, and there's a in the background and embedded into that is a social or collective history. I entered university in 1967 or 68. Not with social science, but I studied language and literature and theater. And the idea was to work either as a movie director or go to the theater. But then, and that's the collective background to that, in 1968, I was quite heavily involved in the students' movement and more or less dropped out of the studies and played what is called Straßentheater, street theater, and worked together with others in political movements. And also found out that I was not really interested into theater. And so there came a time when I had to decide what to do now. And I went back to the university in 1970, 1971, and started to study psychology with sociology as the side topic. Now at that time, and that was the background of my becoming acquainted with ethnomethodology and conversation analysis, at that time, within the students' movement, there was a hot topic, and that was called the critique of the bourgeois sociology. And critique of the bourgeois sociology was, and part of that was that sociology was entirely into quantitative studies. There was nothing about qualitative or interpretive studies on there. And sociology was very stubborn and very stiff, so to speak. So, for example, sociology had role theory. And role theory was meant that people would behave according to role expectations. And that's of course, a silly idea. Mm-hmm. And then at that time, 1970, 1971, in Germany, a book was published with the German title, Wir alle spielen Theater, We All Play Theater. And that was the translation of Goffman's book, Presentation of Self in Everyday Life. And there was another quite influential book in sociology, A Critique of Parsons, which had a chapter on Garfinkel. And the chapter on Garfinkel had the title, Sociology as a Happening. Now, I was doing a theater happening in the street theater, so to speak. And all that together in the beginning of 71, made me interested in what is ethnomethodology all about. At that time, Sicorel's book on method and measurement was translated. Other books by Goffman were translated. And I more or less started to be interested in what is ethnomethodology all about. Nobody knew about it. Even the ones, the professors at the university didn't know about it. So I started to dig into it. And others asked me, what is ethnomethodology all about? So I became suddenly an expert into ethnomethodology. And in 74, I wrote my diploma in psychology and social psychology on Harold Garfinkel's ethnomethodology. And that was a kind of a theoretical reconstruction of what is ethnomethodology all about. So that was 74. And that was partly still in the critique of the traditional sociology. And partly it was already moving into a direction, there is an alternative to that. And nobody knew what it is all about. For example, Berger Luckmann's book on the social construction of sociology was published 1970 in German. That was, of course, an interesting book, but it did not provide an alternative how sociology could do otherwise. And it was an interesting theoretical concept, but what to do from there mm-hmm. on, so to speak. And Garfinkel, and with his ethnomethodology, seemed to provide an idea of how we could do sociology and social sciences and psychology otherwise. Part of the connection, which I want to mention, is that part of the connection to what I'm interested in, what ethnomethodology is interested in, what the students' movement was interested in, is that we were all interested in the taken for granted. And the students' movement did not take for granted education, did not take for granted the relation between men and women, did not take for granted the way of political participation, and so on and so on. And that was politically motivated, of course, not to stay with the taken for grantedness. But Garfinkel's idea was to turn the taken for grantedness, especially into the topic of the analysis. And that was, for me, the interesting element or the connecting between this political motivation on the one hand, and my private motivation being interested in the taken for grantedness on the other hand. And though 74, I finished the book, the diploma on Garfinkel. In 75, at a conference in Konstanz, I met Goffman and Sicorel and Shegloff and others, and started to move into a kind of an academic, more solid treatment of Garfinkel and Ethel methodology. So, for example, I translated CA papers, the paper by Ray Turner, which was later on published in the Suhrkamp volume, and so on. So I became more and more interested in turning what I have done so far, turning that into a doctoral thesis. And that was done when I moved to Constance, which offered a position within a research project in psychiatry, but from a sociological point of view. So it was more or less a recipient designed for me with my clinical psychological background, but moving into sociology. And then I started to work on a doctoral thesis on psychiatric interaction. And while working on that, I applied for a student grant to work at Los Angeles with Garfinkel and conversation analysts. And 77, 78, I went to Los Angeles and stayed there for three quarters of a year and worked there at the Department of Sociology and Anthropology with the guys there. And just I can finish that with the experience that at that time I was very lucky, because that was the last time where CA people and ethno people were all together at one department. So there was Manny Shagloff and Gail Jefferson and Anita Pomerantz and the ethno group of Mel Polner and Michael Lynch, and everybody was at Los Angeles at that time. I left Los Angeles, I think it was summer 78, and that was also the time when Anita went to Boston, Mike Lynch went to England, and so on. So this kind of community, which was settled at the UCLA departments, dissolved and more or less disappeared, because then it started to differentiate more and more, which we nowadays see that the CA development on the one hand and ethno development on the other hand has in fact differentiated much more than I saw at that time.
Well, thank you. That must have been impressive to see all these great figures together. Because we know the articles and we have this abstract image of them, but you met all of them. Wow.
It was I mean, turning to the experience, we had one seminar at UCLA where everybody took part, Garfinkel and the Ethnos and the CA part, and that the basis for that was a video which was made by Chuck Goodwin, who had just finished his dissertation, but he was at the East Coast of America, so he did not partake, but he sent the video, and the video, which is called Meat Market, because it was the recording of three guys in a meat factory, and they were cutting meat, cutlets. So that's why Chuck called it the Meat Market video. And they were, you know, cutting meat, cutlets, and throwing the cutlets into some boxes or so. And that was the video. And I remember that we decided, or Anita, who gave the seminar, decided not to look at the video for the first seminar. So we worked on the seminar transcript for the first seminar and only looked on the video on the second seminar. So only 3 months later, mm-hmm. And the energy which this entire seminar put into the analysis of that meat market transcript was so high that at the end of the first semester, we barely reached the end of the first page of the transcript. So, so we were really, everybody was, every week we met, and everybody was at least writing two or three pages for the last turn which we had and on our focus. And so we concentrated on the next focus, and so it went on until the end of the first until the end of the first semester. And that was a really mind-blowing experience with which I came back to Germany in 1978 and started to give seminars there.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's a good point, talking about university and giving seminars. So now you, Susanne, were a student, right, at that time in Konstanz. So when EM and CA arrived in Germany, you had the other perspective, not the teaching one, but the student perspective. Do you remember?
Exactly. I was studying at that time in the linguistic department and literature department. At first, I had nothing to do with sociology. And the linguistic department was very much dominated by formal linguistics, generative grammar. And that wasn't really the thing I was interested in. I was mainly interested in comparative linguistics, and I met Aldo Di Luzio. Mm-hmm. And Aldo Di Luzio had a really interesting project on migrant workers, Gastarbeiterkinder, and their children. Mm-hmm. And that was quite fascinating. Another thing that was really fascinating and important for me was John Gumperz. Mm-hmm. Aldo Di Luzio invited John Gumperz to come from Berkeley to Konstanz. And from that time on, John came every year to Konstanz for a visiting professorship. And what happened at that time too, that was 1978 till 80s, the feminist movement and feminist linguistics. Mm. And Konstanz was the center of feminist linguistics because Louise Pusch and Senta Trommel-Plötz were there. And I was their heavy. I was working for them as a student. And I was interested in what is there? Do women and men really speak differently? And how do they construct gender differences or power differences? And then I heard of a sociologist, Jörg Bergmann. And this sociologist, Jörg Bergmann, I don't know why, but he invited us, the little group around Aldo Di Luzio, and I was part of this group, and we were invited for data sessions with Jörg. And that was it for me. It was fascinating how Jörg, a sociologist, looked at language and how we suddenly worked with transcripts, looking at everyday interactions, what's happening there, how do you interpret data? You don't speculate because he's a man or she's a woman, that's why he discriminates her or something, but really look at the data, stick to your data. That was something I really learned from Jörg, and that affected the way I looked at conversations, not only with the feminist background, but also with the intercultural background, which was the second interest I had. And I don't forget, and Jörg organized a conference in Konstanz where Shekloff came, the Goodwins came. And for me, it was really, how did you call it? Just mind-blowing or something? It was, it was really perspective, how to work with language, which I was really interested, how to work with language, but really looking at everyday interactions, how do people use language, especially from the point of view, Jörg mentioned the taken for grantedness. And that was something that also inspired me concerning, of course, feminist linguistic, what's a woman and what's a man, what's taken for granted, but also in intercultural communication, what is taken for granted? How come there are these conflicts? What kind of knowledge is there imposed? And how do we interpret certain utterances differently from the way the Chinese interpret them? And finally, through Jörg, I had the idea of a methodology that was the sequential analysis, which would really help me looking at data and help me how to look at language. Yeah. And that was so inspiring. And what was typical for Konstanz at that time, Konstanz was a reform university, a new university. We didn't have, like here in Münster, Department of German, Department of English. Of course, we had sociology and we had linguistics, but it was a small university, and we always kept on meeting in the cafeteria with other disciplines, and Konstanz always put a lot of emphasis on working together the people from different disciplines. And so Jörg had this workshop or this data session, and it was kind of normal that we as linguists were allowed to participate. And that was so fascinating. I still remember, Jörg knows that, Tom Luckmann, who was also working at the interrelation between language and society, and he always complained that in sociology, usually sociologists work with interaction or language, but they have no idea how language works. And on the other hand, we from linguistics had no idea about social theory, about what are social actions, what are social activities. We didn't have any theoretical background. And in a way, it was really great that we had this opportunity to work together with what we knew. Mm-hmm. And not only sociologists and linguists, but also me as a student. I was at that time still a master's student, later on a PhD student. And there was Jörg or Professor Luckmann, Professor Di Luzio. It was such a great atmosphere. And that was so very inspiring.
Well, one could see the enthusiasm still on your face while you're talking. Well, it's interesting because I didn't really know that Constance was such a center to bring sociology and linguistics together and even other disciplines. That's really interesting. Thank you, Susanne. So to both of you now, the next question: how would you describe, starting from Constance, but going further or extending EMCA to Germany? How would you say, how would you describe the spreading of EMNCA in Germany after this start in Konstanz? Would you say that it started mostly in sociology and only slowly made its way to linguistics? And who else in Germany became, or maybe in other countries around Germany, became fascinated by EMNCA and started using it as a methodology?
Well, I guess, Susanne, you can talk about the relation between CA and, for example, linguistic pragmatics or so, like Ehrlich and Wunderlich and these. Mm-hmm. So there was a development within linguistics which has some kind of connection or resemblance to CA. And it would be quite interesting how that could be described. In sociology, I can say that what we were doing was in sociological terms was called microsociology. Mm-hmm. And microsociology had a kind of a forgotten tradition in sociology, and the tradition was Georg Simmel, who around the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century wrote already about the foundation of sociology, the foundation of society in the minute interactions of people when they look at each other, when they have eye contact, and so on. So he already had the idea that sociology, that society, is not something big which is above our heads, but which is something which is produced and generated and constructed all the time when people interact with each other, when people communicate with each other. But that tradition was more or less forgotten, and it was more or less only an academic history of the discipline. So when I started, Simmel was not present there. And only with the translation of Goffman's book at the beginning of the 1970s, Presentation of Self in Everyday Life and so on, then the idea that sociology had a kind of a micro level that was introduced into sociology. Additionally to that, Thomas Luckmann and Peter Berger's book on the social construction of reality became very famous and was read widespread. And the idea that society is something which is in the production, is in the construction, when people look at each other, talk to each other, and so on, that was connected to the Berger-Luckmann book. Mm-hmm. Now, with regard to ethnomethodology, I only remember that there was one other colleague of mine. This is Karin Knorr-Cetina, who was professor at Bielefeld, and who came from the so-called sociology of science. And there was a tradition in sociology, not only to study technology or social class or whatever, but to also study science. But this was also in the traditional, in the more stubborn way of doing it, and not really looking at what scientists are doing. Mm-hmm. And Karin and others like Mulcahy and so, they really tried to, and they really did some ethnographic work in their scientific laboratories, neurological and other laboratories, and tried to study what scientists are doing. And so in Bielefeld, Karin was really doing a kind of an ethnomethodological branch of sociology, and some of her students, like Stefan Hirschauer, and so on, who is now a professor at Mainz, came from Karin. For me, the other more focused question of what is the history of ethnomethodology in Germany, I can only say it remained more or less within Konstanz. We started projects there, and I don't really know of any other university where ethnomethodology would have been practiced. I don't really know why, because in 1976, Surkamp Verlag published a book with the title Ethnomethodologie, and there was a collection of papers which was used by some people, but I think it was only taken as a side branch of microsociology, so to speak, and not something which really could be practiced with some success. So at least from my perspective, ethnomethodology more or less remained as a marginal endeavor. Somebody called it the discipline that came out of the cold, and a little bit that was the reputation of ethnomethodology, also because the text by Garfinkel, they are just unreadable. You can't really read Garfinkel. They are tremendously difficult to read, and even if you want to translate it, they are more or less not translatable. So that, I guess, was also part of the non-success of ethnomethodology in Germany.
Okay.
I don't know what, Susanne, your impression was.
I find it very interesting what you are saying, because for linguistics, in a way, CA was the direction we needed at that time. It came at the right time, because pragmatics just started to develop as a kind of a counter move to generative grammar. Mm-hmm. And pragmatics was, first of all, very much dominated from disciplines from the outside, language philosophy, mm-hmm. speech act theory, mm-hmm. Bryce, also philosophy of language. Mm-hmm. And then we had ethnomethodology and CA. And I think linguists weren't so much interested in, unfortunately not, in Garfinkel and ethnomethodology, mm-hmm. but more in what are these guys doing with language? Mm-hmm. They have no idea how language works. Mm-hmm. And yet what they do is so fascinating. They analyze these everyday interactions. And from the generative point of view, you just looked at competence or innate grammar, but not on how people really speak. And there were these weird guys from California looking at how people actually speak. And it was so fascinating for and a major field, it turned into a major field in pragmatics because they provided the methods how to analyze actually spoken language, not speculating on what people do and not rephrasing the content of what people said, but look at the data. And I think that's why it was so popular. That's why it we linguists who were interested in everyday language were so glad to finally have a method to work with. And that's why in linguistics, right away, we try to find our own transcription conventions, developing GATT and whatever. Yeah, and Konstanz, in a way, was still a very important center for CA, with the connection, of course, to sociology. We needed Jörg and, to a certain extent, our Tom Luckmann, although he's not a conversationalist, Hubert Knoblauch, yeah? We needed, and Ruth Ayers, we needed these people because we didn't know much about social interaction, intersubjectivity. We had to learn a lot, but what we could bring in was what we knew about language, and it was fascinating. And it was a nice time because we had these people pilgrimaging to Konstanz, like Margaret Selting. She came, she was interested in phonology and prosody and wanted to learn what's going on there. Or Arnulf Deppermann, who came out of psychology and then linguistics, and he came. So it was interesting because people came to Konstanz, and there was one big conference, which was very important for CA or or linguistics, and CA was the conference Peter Auer and Aldo Di Luzio organized on contextualization of language. Of course, John Gumperz was still very, very important to us and his theory of contextualization, because he showed us how we can connect pragmatics, sociolinguistics, with actually looking at authentic data. And John, I was went to during my PhD years, I went for a year to work with John at Berkeley. And John, I didn't know beforehand, John was actually one of the person on the committee for Harvey Sacks' PhD thesis. So there was all this connection, and Lucy Suchman was a student of John, and we went to Cupertino and had data sessions with Goodwin. So it all kind of rounded up to this connection of people doing anthropological linguistics or linguistic anthropology, sociology mainly, Jörg in Germany, and linguists. But another center then developed in Mannheim at the IDS, Institute of German Language, especially because of Werner Kallmayr. Very early, I think beginning of the 80s or end of the 70s, he already read Sacks, Shagloff, and Garfinkel and tried to integrate them into sociolinguistics. They had a big project in Mannheim on Stadtsprache.
Stadtsprache, yeah.
So we had this, it was very fascinating because there was CA and we were so happy to absorb it for what we were interested in pragmatics and sociolinguistics. And I think it was much more popular in linguistics, CA was, than maybe in sociology.
Yeah. I would agree with Susanna's perception. And I only want to add that Werner Kallmayr, very early on, was probably the first one who published a paper on conversation analysis together with the sociologist Fritz Schütze, who both at that time were assistants at Bielefeld. And if I remember correctly, they even had a small conference there where Sacks was participating. So they were very early initiators of an interest in that, although they, at least Fritz Schütze, moved in another direction later on. Werner Kallmayr had his own idea with the Stadtsprachenprojekt, which was very akin to conversation analysis, of course. But this kind of connection between conversation analysis on the one hand and sociology on the other hand, I think that was really a unique element of the Konstanz situation. And I can't think of any other university in the German-speaking language where that took place. Mm-hmm. And especially after Thomas Luckmann and I had this project where Susanne and others participated in the study of moral communication and so on. Somebody once asked Gail Jefferson about her transdisciplinary perspective, and she rejected the question with the remark that disciplines are not of any relevance for her. So that's why she was not interested in transdisciplinarity, because disciplines were of no relevance for her. And that probably was a little bit the same for us when we started. We were interested in getting our hands on some data and finding something, whether somebody was a psychologist or a linguist or a sociologist, was for us at least not very interesting. And we didn't even find any lines where that kind of problem or fights between disciplines would have occurred. I can't remember that.
No, I even Tom Luckmann offered me his assistant professorship for 1 year when Hubert Knoblauch went to see Gumperz in California, and I came back from California, and then Tom said, "Why don't you come to sociology? You can have my assistant professorship." I told him, "Tom, I'm not a sociologist." Yeah, but what you do fits perfectly well. And it did, of course, I felt lost because I couldn't do much about classical traditional sociology. But what I could do was this kind of CA, ethnomethodology, ethnography of speaking. And this was typical for Konstanz. I only learned to appreciate it after I left Konstanz. And I realized that's not normal at German universities. Yeah.
Perhaps I can add one remark.
Yeah.
I think we could only do this, and I could, for example, only write Habilitation on Gossip because of the name of Thomas Luckmann, because he was such a famous person. He has such a big reputation, and he, so to speak, claimed a garden around what he was doing. And we made our somersaults there, and nobody cared about that. And so the freedom we had to follow our noses, so to speak, when we studied the data we collected, that was only possible within that kind of garden of freedom which Tom has provided for us.
That's a nice image. So thank you, Konstanz, for being there, because I get more and more the impression that without the University of Konstanz, we wouldn't have CA and ethnomethodology in Germany. But it's interesting that you say that both of you actually have, you have come to EM and CA not through reading papers about it, or not only that, but really by meeting the people who kind of founded the whole discipline. So you were also like fascinated by the whole environment, the interdisciplinarity, etc. But how would you say from both of your perspectives was EM and CA received at other universities where they did not have this context, where they did not have conferences, meeting people who founded the disciplines? Would you say that there was a lot of skepticism at the beginning, and how did that change over time? And maybe that's also discipline dependent, right? Maybe sociologists were more skeptical about it than linguists, or vice versa. I don't know. What would you say to that?
Well, my impression is that when students or younger academic scholars became acquainted with CA and ethnomethodology, they need to make a decision whether whether it's really worth to pay such an amount of attention and energy into these little trivial things of interaction. And when you don't have this kind of freedom, which I have just described, but are more into a settled environment of a discipline, which has, you know, its subcategories and everything, then you need to really know, or need to really decide whether it's worth for you and what's in for you, whether you really want to go the risk that you invest into something which is of no interest for your colleagues, with which you may have problems when you want to write your doctoral thesis or your habilitation. And additionally, my impression is that learning CA is a little bit of a handicraft work. You know it when you sit side by side of somebody who really, you know, needs an hour to transcribe a minute, for example. And why you need an hour in order to transcribe a minute? That is some kind of you need to make a calculation. Is there something in for me? And I don't know whether at other universities, with other roots of education, colleagues and younger colleagues really had the chance to realize the potential of CA work and the potential of the analysis when you take on a CA or ethnomethodological perspective. Mm-hmm. And I guess that this may partly account for the fact that ethnomethodology, at least in sociology, remained a subdiscipline for which you now can name some universities, but a universities with the number of one hand, so four or five mm-hmm. universities where ethnomethodology is done with dedication. I guess that may be one of the reasons why ethnomethodology was not really widespread and not really spreading.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about it. It was really, in a lot of ways, different in linguistics, because I had some identity problems. As I mentioned already, I worked in sociology then as an assistant professor just for 1 year, substituting Hubert Knoblauch. Then I was working with Jörg and Tom Lackmann in the DFG, German Research Foundation, a project on moral in communication. And then I was confronted by so many people who wanted to advise me what to do and what not to do. It was helpful because they told me, look, you can't continue like this. You are not a sociologist. You won't get any job in sociology. And the longer you do these kind of things, you are no one will treat you as a linguist and believe you are a linguist. And that was actually a big problem. Mm-hmm. Mainly also Aldo Di Luzio was in Romance language. Mm-hmm. Betty Kuba-Kuhlen I worked with was in English language. And I always tried to tell people I am a German linguist and no one believed me. It was Konstanz, and it was possible in Konstanz, but nowhere else. Mm-hmm. And so I had the impression it only started, people in linguistics took me serious for afterwards getting a job once I started looking at grammar and syntax. Mm-hmm. Before, I was doing really strange things, kind of utterances, people which are chaotic, people are speaking as if they wouldn't know how to build sentences. What's going on there? These were the prejudices when you work with transcripts or give presentation. Why do you work with people who don't know how to form sentences? Why don't we invent the sentences? We know how German works. We can write down our sentences and analyze them. But once I started working on grammar, and for me it was fascinating because I was in China for 5 years teaching German at different universities, and I was confronted with German grammar. And I was confronted this is when my work on weil and obwohl clauses and subordinate clauses started. And I found out, my God, I can work with methodology from CA on German syntax. Why do people in Germany use weil with subordinate syntax? Geh jetzt nach Hause, weil es heftig regnet. And with main clause syntax, ich gehe jetzt nach Hause, weil es regnet heftig. And I started using this methodology I learned to analyze syntax. And this is when I finally, when people started to recognize this has something to do with linguistics. And that was the reason why they accept, I think that was one of the reasons why they accepted my habilitation in Konstanz, that I started working on grammar too. And that was the reason why afterwards I could apply for professorships. And I was so lucky. I got several professorships offered at the same time. And I think suddenly there was, it was different in sociology for you. But for me, suddenly people started being interested in people who can analyze authentic interactions and syntax and classical fields or areas in linguistics with their methods. And I was so fortunate that end of, when was it, 2000 2001, I applied, and that was the time that I got professorships, and mainly because of my work on grammar.
So CA, but yeah, not really pure CA. But you had,
well, this was also in a way one of the reasons why Betty Kubakul and Margaret Salting asked or reflected on the idea how we can we apply CA for linguistic issues and topics. Mm-hmm. And that's how they founded the Interactional Linguistics.
Mm-hmm. I think that one parallel to that, what Susanne has just described, one parallel to that in sociology is that there was not a professorship or an academic position for somebody who has a profile in ethnomethodology. Mm-hmm. But, and that was, so to speak, something which rescued me. There was a growing interest in qualitative methods. Mm-hmm. And qualitative methods, as I said, when I studied sociology and psychology in the 70s, was entirely unknown in Germany, although it had a tradition. In the 30s, there were ethnographic studies and so on, but that was entirely extinguished. And there was a growing interest in qualitative method, not only ethnography, but also like open interviews, what Fritz Schütze called narrative interviews, on discourse analysis, introducing ideas from France, Foucauldian ideas into German, and so on. So there was a growing interest in qualitative methods, and ethnomethodology was, so to speak, identified as part of that big train on going to the interpretive and qualitative methods. Mm-hmm. And my last position at the university at Bielefeld was described as a professor for qualitative methods. Mm-hmm. So the qualitative methods was a little bit the same what the grammar was for the linguists, that in sociology was the idea that ethnomethodologists do a kind of qualitative methods and can also cover other qualitative methods additionally to CA and ethnomethodology.
Yeah, well, thank you, both of you. Now we have reached a point where I feel like Jörg is talking about EM in sociology and Susanne is talking about CA in linguistics. I'd like to go back one step and ask you, Jörg, you mentioned in one of your emails before that the best image for CA being a paradoxical methodology is the fact that this first big paper, the simple systematic paper from 1974, was published by three sociologists, but in a linguistic journal. And so what would you say? You also said that sociologists simply dismissed CA as something that is considered linguistic, as a linguistic issue. So now today, do you see, or over time, did you see any changes in that? And how would you advise also early career researchers in sociology that are interested in CA, but also linguists maybe, to treat this paradox regarding their profile? So do you, if you do CA in sociology, how do you sell yourself as someone who could be interesting for a university?
I think that's a very difficult question. And from my perspective, a scholar, younger scholar, who has mainly done traditional CA studies and CA work and published in CA journals, like Human Studies or what have you, Research on Language and Social Interaction, I think such a guy does not have a chance to get a professorship in Germany. So CA is a method of qualifying yourself as for an academic career is not enough for an academic career in sociology. You can regret that, but I'm quite neutral to that development. And I see the development of interactional linguistics as a as the success of conversation analysis, so to speak. You know, in scientific programs develop, and you don't know how they develop. There's this very famous little remark by Lichtenberg, who says, one creates the idea, the other nurtures the idea, the third one brings the idea to the world, the fourth feeds the idea, and the fifth buries the idea, so to speak. So ideas have a kind of a history. And for me, CA and the success of interactional linguistics are connected with each other. CA is no longer, I think, by itself, a part of sociology. CA has transformed into interactional linguistics, but there are people like Christian Meyer in Konstanz or people in Mainz who use conversation analysis in order to study certain social worlds or parts of the social world. And they do this by using CA, but not staying with CA, not remaining with CA, but additional, enrich it with additional approaches from phenomenology, from discourse analysis, from other interactional studies, and so. So I think that a sociologist with a pure CA profile does not have a chance for a career in sociology. It has to be connected to other elements, interactional elements, institutional elements, and other. For me, the interesting idea is where this, what interactional linguists are doing with the sociological DNA of CA. Because, I mean, the paper by Zach Shackloff-Jefferson, or the papers, even the repair paper was published in language, it was done by sociologists. And the interesting thing is, what do linguistics do with the sociological heritage of CA? Where does that go? What is the future of interactional linguistics? Does that connect to pragmatics? Does that turn into something entirely else? Or is something there where the traditional CA program can still be identified?
Yeah, thank you. Susanne, I know from also your CV that you have, and you just told me before that you've been working a lot with Chinese universities, for example. Would you say that CA in Germany developed differently than in other countries? And if so, how and why? Maybe also from an intercultural perspective.
Yeah, I want to tie back to what Jörg said. I think that's really something typical in Germany with CA, that it kind of transferred or got transposed or something into interactional linguistics. Mm. And mm-hmm. this had to do because it was the reception of CA was really furious or was really groundbreaking in pragmatics and linguistics. Mm-hmm. And people tried to fuse it with their linguistic questions, more or less sociolinguistics, pragmatics, and also grammar. Mm. And so I totally agree with Jörg. I think that's the way it will go. But I'm a bit scared that what Jörg calls a sociological DNA is still there. But it doesn't get to the surface hardly anymore, because the people who work with it hardly know anything about the sociological background. And that's a little bit of a pity, especially because interactional linguistics will more or less get merged with quantitative methods. There's this big trend, and we all know as soon as quantitative methods are involved, we have a new research group now financed by the DFG, German Science Foundation, on pronouns in interaction. Once you start doing quantitative studies, it's something very, very different. You talk about what tools, what technical tools, how to count, what statistic programs, and you look at data in a very different way. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do anymore with the basis of CA and ethno methodology, and I'm a bit afraid that it will diffuse so much that we are back where we started, somewhere else. But still, yeah, in China, you ask about China. I just looked at the IPRA program for Brussels. There are lots of Chinese nowadays. During the last few years in China, pragmatics got very strong, mainly in linguistics or in English linguistics, not so much in German linguistics. There they mainly do German as a second language or cultural studies. But it got very, very strong due to what's happening in China at the moment politically. The topics get very ideological.
Okay.
So a lot has to do, also you see that from the program on institutional interaction, of course, media, social media interactions, on politeness, impoliteness, conflict talk.
Okay.
These are the topics, so these are pragmatic topics, and I know very few people in China who actually work with CA, but what they do is a sort of mixture of discourse analysis, sequential analysis, but always connected to social issues.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So it means that CA finds its own speciality in mm-hmm. every country, depending mm-hmm. on what.
Yeah, there's one point I want to mention, which is very important for me. Jörg already mentioned that doing CA is a sort of craftship. Mm-hmm. You need years to get trained. And you only realize that once you meet people who haven't been trained, but who are interested in CA and have their data, and the way they look at their data. It was when you, Sophia, came to my Werkstatt, right away I knew the way you looked at data, you were trained. And it's very difficult to describe what this training is. You cannot transmit it within a compact seminar. You have to have the experience of keeping on looking at data, looking what's happening. And this is why I'm so thankful to Jörg, that I could start very early, like studying a foreign language, the earlier you start, the better it is. And I was still in my master years when I started, when Jörg started having these data sessions with us. Mm-hmm. And what I find in my seminars, when I do classes on interactional linguistics or whatever I call them now, pronouns in interaction or whatever, grammar in interaction, it's very, very important to stick to the strict methodological procedure of CA, even though you can and your students can leave that and meld it with ethnography, interviews or whatever. But it's so important to have this kind of knowledge, how to analyze your data and look at the data, look at the sequential procedure and not jump from here to there. And I think it's so valuable as a qualitative method of looking at authentic data. And I really hope that will stay for a while, that people won't leave this background. And I'm a bit afraid it's getting more and more lost the more quantitative approaches now are brought in, and they get very popular in linguistics at the moment.
Well, maybe there will be a movement backwards once we understood that. but yes, I guess that CA is actually like learning. I feel myself it was like learning a language, because you get frustrated, you make mistakes, you feel in data sessions that you don't know how to describe data, that you don't use the right words to describe it, and then you describe intentions and all these kinds of things, like a step forward and then a step backward. Yeah, that's typical CA. I have one last question for both of you, and you already touched upon this issue, but I would like to ask it nevertheless. Where do you see the future of EM and CA, if you can have like an ideal future, not like you said, it's moving towards quantitative perspective, but where would you like to see it maybe? And what are your ideal future perspectives for both disciplines?
As I already said, CA by itself will not survive in sociology. It has its harbor in interactional linguistics, and although others may be skeptical with regard to this development, I remember Manny Shekloff was very critical with regard to the foundation of interactional linguistics. I'm much more relaxed. I see it, as I said, as a development of a scientific discipline, the stupidest thing would be to stay as it is for 50 years. I mean, scientific knowledge and erkenntnis is developing, and also the methods are developing. And so in that sense, I'm quite relaxed, and I see interactional linguistics as the proof of the potential, the power of conversation analysis, and in that sense, as the success. Now, with regard to sociology, I am also quite optimistic, because I see that colleagues of mine, many of whom have worked with me, have managed to include CA and ethnomethodological perspectives into their studies of certain topics, like Ruth Ayers, who is doing media studies, but from a definitely ethnomethodology and conversation analytical perspective, or people in Oldenburg who do sociology of sports, but analyzing interaction and, you know, this assisting and helping and recruiting and all these things which go on in sports education with an ethnomethodological perspective, or the people in Mainz around Stefan Hirschauer, who have done the idea of that men and women are constructions, and there are so many things in between. And now let's analyze what's going on in between, and can you move forth and back? And this way of handling gender identities and analyzing it with an ethnomethodological approach, this I think is done very well in Mainz. Mm-hmm. And Christian Meyer in in Constance is doing the very same in intercultural analysis and studies. So there are not many places, and it's not a main traffic, so to speak, in sociology, but there are decent places where that kind of approach is done. And I'm convinced that my colleagues who are not in that enterprise can see what's in there for them. What is the result? What they can gain by taking on traditional sociological topics with such a perspective? Mm-hmm. So I'm not pessimistic. I'm optimistic with regard to that ethnomethodology will not only survive, but it will develop at certain places. And one can only hope that this way of tradition will not be cut off. So that means that once Roots and others' professorships come to an end, that these professorships and academic positions and traditions, in fact, will continue. There are other experiences, like in Finland, where Anssi Perekylä's position, for example, was not advertised in such a direction, and that means that this tradition will be cut off there, more or less. So it's not for sure, but right now there are quite settled places and quite settled contexts for the work of ethnomethodology and CA-inspired work in sociology in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for linguistics, it's partly similar, partly, of course, different. I also think that due to interactional linguistics, we have a new basis now. Mm. And no matter which direction you come from and you want to do qualitative analysis of actually spoken interactions, there is no way to ignore that, to ignore interactional linguistics and CA. The standards which were set by CA on doing qualitative analysis of the use of language in real life are set. Mm-hmm. And you cannot go beyond that. Mm-hmm. I think that will stay. Sequential analysis, sequential methods, all this will stay. And we have the same diffusion now going into multimodality, media studies in linguistics, institutional interactions, or also what I'm working on is also on cross-linguistic interactions or interactions with different languages, and compare what is taken for granted, what is not, what is similar, typologically different. And still, even though languages like Chinese and German, Turkish, German are so different typologically, still methods of accomplishing certain activities are quite similar. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And a part which I forgot, that even nowadays, people working with historical linguistics and written texts, of course, mm-hmm. even there, they nowadays apply parts of these methods of sequential mm-hmm. analysis. And that's mm-hmm. really a big, big mm-hmm. success.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Right. Yeah, also with chat communication and all these,
exactly.
these kind of media. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Chat box mm-hmm. interactions mm-hmm. and whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Susanne and Jörg, for your time and for discussing CA and EM with me and the future and the past and for your
thanks
anecdotes.
To you for your initiative.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity you have given us to reflect on our own history and biography.
Thanks very much for listening to this podcast. That was me, Sophia, talking with Jörg Bergmann and Susanne Gündner about how EM and CA developed in Germany over time.
If you have ideas or want to participate in the ISCA newsletter or our podcasts and other projects, please go to conversationanalysis.org and reach out to us. We'd love your input in what we're building, which we hope is a truly international connection amongst our EM and CA communities. Our theme music is Ethnomethodology by Peter Daniel off of the album Convulsive Listening.